the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Filling Out the Blocks, Development Space Running Out in Cary. And the cover story begins with a second headline inside the Triangle Business Journal, The Last of the Rest, Rapid Growth Raises New Challenges for Boxed in Cary. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. The big swaths of vacant land that Tim Smith's Preston Development Company typically deals in are gone in Cary. There are no real big pieces. That's what my company deals in, is taking large tracts of land and splitting them up, Smith says. We're not able to find those large tracts anywhere in Cary. That's why we're over in Chatham County with Chatham Park and a few things. It's hard to find big tracts of land, and when they get smaller, it's not worth it for us to develop it. Cary is running out of room for development, especially anything more than 50 acres of green land. What is being developed is either infill, redevelopment, or residential that pushes west into Chatham County. What's available is expensive. One plot of nearly 38 acres near downtown is on the market for a staggering $1 million per acre. This brings a new set of challenges to the former bedroom community as it becomes more boxed in due to booming development. In 1990, Cary's population was a mere 45,000. That rose to 97,000 by the year 2000 and a whopping 176,000 by July 2021, according to U.S. Census data. To put that in perspective, Cary's population is roughly triple that of Chapel Hill, 61,000. And more people are moving to Cary, especially with the Apple campus set to rise and the downtown undergoing a remarkable revitalization. But with this burly growth comes big city challenges. The median sale price of a home as of January 2023 is $585,000, according to Redfin. The median household income as of 2021 is $113,782, according to census data. The days of big green pieces of land for sale in Cary are long gone. Scott Berry, chief development officer for the town, says there are 52,740 total acres in Cary's land use plan boundary. Of that total acreage, only 14%, or about 7,383 acres, is available for development. And according to Smith, what is left is piecemeal tracts of land. Moss Withers, principal and CEO of Lee & Associates, Raleigh-Durham, and chair-elect of the board of the Cary Chamber of Commerce, says housing will remain affordable as units become smaller. So it's affordability through size, he says. Cary is either blessed or cursed by higher average income per household. Town manager Sean Stiegel says Cary is working on a plan to address these issues and handle future development and affordability hurdles. As the greenfield land, that inventory dwindles down, our focus has been, and actually has been for the last 5 years, primarily on the redevelopment of existing sites, he says. Just because there isn't greenfield land available certainly doesn't mean that our development will be stopped. Looking toward Chatham. Most of the pieces of land that could be developed are in the northwest quadrant of Cary near the old Chatham Golf Course and, not surprisingly, around the future Apple campus site on Lewis Stevens Drive near Highway 540. This is because most of the rest of Cary, especially the eastern portion, is mostly developed, leaving smaller tracts for infill or older buildings that could be redeveloped. It hasn't stopped developers from proposing projects. The town has more than 25 development, rezoning, and annexation cases under review, and more than 50 active developments. At least 60% of those cases are in Northwest Cary, with many of them already under construction. For example, Woodfield Investments, a real estate developer in Virginia and the Carolinas, is planning a 306-unit multifamily community within Alston Town Center, off Highway 55, not far from the site of Apple's proposed campus. Meanwhile, developers are scrambling to buy and grab the remaining large sites. Most are in Northwest Cary and are mixed-use projects offering residential units and retail and office space. Aside from the 14% of aside from the 14% of vacant land remaining to be developed, the only other option for Cary development is what is pushing into Chatham County. But the Cary land in Chatham can only be residential because of the Jordan Lake watershed zoning. Mark Ashness, principal at CE Group, says the growth leaking into Chatham has been a steady march west over the years. "I know Cary is pinched with Morrisville to the north, Apex to the south, and the lake to the west," Ashness says. "The only solution would be for Cary to go back to the county and talk about an update to the plan." Stiegel says the town has had a boundary agreement with Chatham County since 2012 that dictates that part of Chatham that is eligible to be served by Cary's public utility services. Therefore, it's included within the Cary land planning area. And with the location of the lake, Cary has to reduce the density, building homes on larger lots in order to comply. "The big issue is the lake itself has some water quality problems," Ashness says. "What happens when it rains is that the water actually backs up into the lake from the dam. Instead of the water flowing toward the dam, it flows away from the dam. It tends to stagnate that water, which creates the water quality issues that they see." With that understanding, a lot of people in Chatham County are very sensitive to doing anything that's going to create even more problems for the water quality in the lake. Prices a challenge. Moving to Cary has become unattainable for many, as its homes cost more than the median home price in the Greater Triangle of $385,000, according to the January 2023 market report from Triangle MLS. Less developed towns such as Fuquay, Varina, Knightdale, and Wake Forest tend to be more affordable. The cost of living in Cary is 6% higher than the national average, while Fuquay, Varina is 7% lower than the national average, according to compensation software PayScale data. Rent is skyrocketing too. Real estate platform Zumper reports the average rent for a one-bedroom in Cary is $1,531, which is comparable to downtown Raleigh. This means employees in the service industry, the ones making the new restaurants and the new retail stores possible, face a real challenge if they want to live in the community. The rapid growth has contributed to the town's public revenue, with about 80% of new revenue growth coming from the new tax base, according to the town's comprehensive plan. The plan reports that the town has seen a direct correlation between population growth and tax revenue growth. The growth has increased property values as well, which has helped the town be able to provide and maintain infrastructure and additional services. With just a small amount of land left for development, and as the new revenue growth slows, the challenge becomes how to continue to maintain the level of service and infrastructure the town has been providing for decades. Another issue facing the town is a fair balance of the tax base. Wither says a healthy tax base typically includes 70% from residential and 30% from commercial, and that Cary's tax base is a little under that. But the lack of land means there's not enough room for new industrial and commercial uses. Merritt has that project up near the airport, which is Cary designated, and that is just garbage land, and the only reason that they're developing it is because that's all that was left, Wither says. That wipes out the future zoning of anything in Cary that is industrial, so now you have no ability to grow your industrial sector unless you rip something else down, which means they're probably tapped out on that use on the tax base. Then you have to start going vertical to create more commercial tax base. As the town watches land disappear, Stiegel says the redevelopment of older and underutilized sites has become a priority for the town. An example is U.S. Soccer, considering Cary as a location for its new headquarters and training facility. While there isn't land for such a development, U.S. Soccer could take advantage of the existing facilities at Wake Med Soccer Park or off East Chatham Street. Another potential for redevelopment or adding taller development is an assemblage of land in downtown Cary at the intersection of East Chatham Street and Southeast Maynard Road. Owner Curtis Westbrook Sr. is selling the 37.8 acres for potentially more than $1 million an acre. Wither says it's the last remaining large assemblage in downtown Cary. The land has two shopping plazas and a mobile home on site, and Westbrook says it could easily get taller to allow for denser development. East Cary has been slow to develop, and this is a real good opportunity to reach out for new ownership that can either improve what's existing, which could happen and be no major change, Westbrook says, but it does give the town the opportunity for a landmass that you could go up in height very easily. Downtown investment. Redevelopment is the key to Cary's future. Economic Development Director Ted Boyd says the town had has a good rhythm going with investment in downtown and excitement around the new downtown park. He expects the next step in redevelopment to be around the Bob Jones Corridor and South Hills Shopping Center, and greater density is likely. Similar to downtown, we're not trying to develop every inch. It's trying to have that balance of repurposing existing developments and mixing in new construction. Stiegel says that going forward, 80% of the development will be focused on redevelopment, with the town focusing on downtown and its corridors, as well as the South Hills Mall site and the Epic Games site, the old Cary Town Center. Wither says the town will need to get creative in the future, especially with providing more walkable areas with amenities such as Fenton, which is quickly becoming a top destination in the community. As the town gets more expensive, Stiegel says affordability has been the most discussed policy by the town council over the past year, and that the town has started setting aside $5 million a year for affordable housing projects. The first is a 126-unit apartment building on town-owned land at 921 Southeast Maynard Road, which was approved in November 2022. Cary is aware of its challenges, which it makes clear in its comprehensive plan. The cost of providing services and maintaining infrastructure is expected to rise, and the annual increase in costs could eventually surpass the increase in revenues at current tax rates, the plan states. It concludes, the challenge is the demand for increased services and new community amenities and an aging infrastructure that will require future maintenance investments. Cary's challenge will be to identify fiscally sustainable revenue generation models supported by the community that can continue to provide high-quality services and facilities to existing and future residents. But as land grows tight, that won't get any easier. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The first headline, New Vibe for East End. Development in Raleigh to the east of North Hills has been highlighted by Raleigh Ironworks and the Exchange Raleigh, but another development that will help ignite what had been a rundown part of town is also emerging and hoping to establish a new identity for that part of town. The East End Market project is still evolving, with large swaths of concrete and vacant space where future development will come, but it got a boost this week when East End Bistro opened. Not long ago, opening a high-end French bistro in a part of town dominated by auto repair shops and rusty industrial space would have seemed ridiculous, but with the next-door Dock 1053 project rocking, Chef Georgios Bakatsias jumped in to open the bistro in the East End Market. Raleigh real estate firms SLI Capital, where Brian Kane is CEO, and Atlas Stark, with founding partners Gabriel Gilloy and Trey Adams, began construction on East End Market in April 2021, tearing down low-rise office buildings and converting a former railroad warehouse to creative use. Much of the first phase is leased, with Common Desk in the far end and East End Bistro and East Bauer Cider Company among the tenants. More development is ahead as the Raleigh City Council in 2021 approved up to 11 stories, but with caps at 7 or lower stories in other cases. As cities grow and evolve, certain areas change and take on new identities. In Raleigh, for example, Kane Realty drove the use of Midtown for the North Hills area, an echo of Midtown Atlanta. The East End Market project looks to capture the vibe of Fourth Ward in Atlanta and South End in Charlotte, and to make East End a part of Raleigh's vernacular. NCFC ramps up food options. Soccer fans have new ways to fuel up in Cary. The North Carolina Football Club and the town of Cary have inked a deal with Unique Food and Beverage. The Maryland company will be the new concessionaire for events at Wake Med Soccer Park and effectively double the number of points of service for customers. Existing concession stands will add more windows, and new stands will be added as well. Food trucks will also be on the concourse and at the newly designed Fan Fest on the north side of the stadium. The deal will also introduce mobile ordering and bring back fountain soda and draft beer, including options from local breweries. Revamping our concessions was a big priority for the club this offseason based on our internal evaluations and the feedback from fans throughout last season, says Francie Gutskin, president of NCFC. We are excited about our partnership with UFB, whose expertise will bring new menu items, ordering processes, and more to improve the fan experience. UNC Health losing affiliate hospital. UNC Health and Carolina East Health System are ending a partnership less than 2 years after it started. The hospital systems announced March 7 that they agreed to end an affiliation that began in July 2021. Carolina East CEO Michael Smith said both systems agreed it was in their best interest to no longer maintain the affiliation agreement. The health systems didn't say why they are terminating the agreement at the end of March, but it brings an end to an agreement between UNC Health and New Bern-based Carolina East that the two systems had once touted as an opportunity to enhance the quality of health care and grow specialty services in eastern North Carolina. In recent years, UNC Health has expanded its presence throughout North Carolina through agreements with various smaller health systems. For instance, last year, UNC Health finalized a management services agreement with Appalachian Regional Healthcare System, which includes 3 hospitals and 13 medical offices in the western part of the state. Looking for love in Nash County. Nash County sees an opportunity to attract single men and women to its community and is launching a tourism campaign dedicated to the effort. The I'm Still Looking campaign will center around a fictional man named Jim Green, who has been unlucky in love. Every other week, the campaign will release a video detailing Green's latest date and also have videos on dating advice. The goal is to bring more millennials and Gen Xers to Nash County for overnight stays, says Barbara Green, tourism director for Nash County. The county is also using Rocky Mountain Mills, a craft beer incubator, to sell visitors on the idea that Nash County is a good place to come for dates. Changes coming at Chargrill. Developers are watching the new Raleigh City Council closely, but the City Council on March 7 cleared the way for a large development on the site of the city's original Chargrill location on Hillsborough Street. Wilson Blunt of Raleigh received unanimous approval for its 20-story rezoning request for a collection of parcels on Hillsborough Street and North Boylan Avenue. The new zoning comes with conditions to preserve the historic Elmwood House and keep the Chargrill location open in some form. The new zoning allows up to 507 residential units, 65,734 square feet of retail space, and 356,356 square feet of office space. And finally, a new report shows we are in debt. A new report out of WalletHub shows consumers racked up $180.3 billion in new debt during 2022. But it could be worse, at least in Durham, which was among the cities in the report cited for having the smallest debt increases. In Durham, household credit card debt increased $720. Compare that to Raleigh, which saw a household increase of $846, or Charlotte, which saw an uptick of $1,691. The top 3 highest increases were reported to be in California, with Santa Clarita topping the list. Its households increased their household credit card debt by $4,053. And now we turn to some of the top stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one is written by Zach Ezone. RTP research firm braces for more tough times ahead. As challenges in the drug development industry persist, a Triangle company is anticipating more obstacles ahead. After finishing last year at $70.1 million, Science 31, a clinical research company based in Research Triangle Park, is projecting revenue in 2023 to total between $55 million to $60 million. CEO David Coleman says this guidance is partly based on the industry-wide issues, which include drug funding challenges, pharma and biotech companies taking longer to make decisions, and drug developers being more cost-conscious. These issues are unlikely to change in the short term. We continue to see, from an industry standpoint, longer decision-making timelines because pharma and biotechs are being a lot more intentional with their spend, Coleman said during a March 7 earnings call. A lot more cost pressure that they're feeling is, I think, being translated into their discovery efforts, and then we are seeing funding issues within the biotech space as well. The guidance from Science 37 also reflects a shortfall in bookings the company experienced last year, especially in the third quarter, and project cancellations throughout the year. In November, Science 37 announced plans to lay off 90 employees as part of a cost reduction program intended to save the company $21 million in gross cash annually. The company ended last year with about 460 employees, down from 600 at the end of 2021, according to securities filings. Science 37 stock is down more than 90% from a year ago, trading around 27 cents on March 7. Komen outlined ways the company is trying to turn things around. In the third quarter, the company appointed Michael Shipton as its new chief commercial officer. Shipton is an industry veteran who most recently was senior vice president of customer solutions and strategy at Morrisville-based Syneos Health. Science 37 is also prioritizing its MetaSite offering, a virtual site that allows patients and providers to access trials from any location. Komen said MetaSite is the company's greatest area of customer demand, and will likely be the primary vehicle for both pipeline bookings and backlog as Science 37 moves forward. The company in February acquired a life sciences platform from Vault Health to boost its MetaSite capabilities. These enhanced capabilities will help us to reduce some of the manual efforts required to execute decentralized clinical trials and drive operational efficiencies, Komen said. And our next article is written by David Pertell. Kane drops rezoning request. Raleigh developer wanted tall heights for towers at North Hills project. Kane Realty Corporation has pulled its rezoning request seeking new high-rises in North Hills, hitting pause on part of a major effort to transform the shopping and entertainment district in Raleigh. The developer has told the city to drop its rezoning request, which would have allowed buildings up to 37 stories. When reached March 7, Bonner Gaylord, Kane's chief operating officer, declined to discuss the situation. The decision comes after months of delay on the rezoning and a city council election that swept new leadership into power. Four new council members joined in December with a message that they plan to put more scrutiny on developers amid the city's rapid growth and rising cost of living. Also, the commercial real estate market is trending down amid the shift to remote work and companies shedding office space. Meanwhile, developers looking to sign companies to large spaces in their new projects are struggling to find potential tenants. Kane's rezoning request had sat before council for months with no action as the previous council heard strong opposition to the project from residents of the North Hills area. Kane made multiple concessions in an effort to push the rezoning forward, including limiting heights to 37 stories and adding affordable housing units. The new council had put the rezoning request on hold until this month. Even though the rezoning is off the table now, Kane will likely have to wait 2 years before resubmitting another request. The developer's overhaul of the North Hills main district is ongoing. Three new buildings are on track to be complete later this year at the site of the former JCPenney store. The One North Hills building has topped out with a target completion date of August. A five-story office building and a 12-story residential building are pacing to be complete in August and late 2023, respectively. Novo Nordisk buys 100 acres for expansion. This is written by Evan Hoopfer. One of the largest employers in Johnston County is eyeing an expansion. Pharmaceutical company Novo Nordisk purchased 104.47 acres in Clayton for $6.8 million, according to two deeds filed February 23rd. The land sits along Powhatan Road, just east of the company's current facilities in Clayton. The purchase price comes out to about $65,000 an acre. A spokesperson says Novo Nordisk is working to expand its manufacturing operations company-wide. She highlighted comments that Heinrich Wolf, executive vice president, made in 2022 that Novo Nordisk is investing more than $1 billion in projects around the world. For Novo Nordisk's production facilities in Johnston County, these land purchases are to ensure North Carolina remains a prime location for future potential expansion plans to improve and increase production capacity, said Nicole Arahu, spokesperson for the company. This land purchase comes after the company and the Johnston County Commissioners came to an agreement in September on an incentives package to facilitate the company's local expansion. It already employs around 1,700 workers in the region. Tech layoffs have impact on the Triangle. Major employers shed jobs with some ripple effect on local economy. This is written by Lauren Onasorge. A painful exercise is how Zoom CEO Eric Wan describes the California company's decision to reduce its team by 15% or about 1,300 employees. This painful exercise has been a tremendous learning experience for us, he told analysts recently. It allows us to look inward to reset ourselves so we can weather the economic environment with greater focus and agility, deliver for our customers, and achieve Zoom's long-term vision. Zoom isn't alone in pushing that reset button, as companies across the nation have been slashing thousands of jobs in recent weeks. Big tech firms such as Cisco, Google, Meta Platforms, Amazon, and IBM have all confirmed layoffs. In the Triangle, where firms such as Cisco and IBM have sprawling campuses in Research Triangle Park, the layoffs have been felt. Smaller players have also cut jobs locally. That includes a handful of California tech firms who eliminated some remote positions in North Carolina, such as Chipper Cash and Pier Street, which recently notified state regulators of a handful of layoffs. Cephas Nawab, associate professor at the in the Department of Economics at North Carolina A&T State University, says that if the Federal Reserve keeps hiking interest rates to fight inflation, more layoffs are likely. So far, most of the major layoffs have been at tech companies, and the Triangle has a diversified economy. And even within the tech sector, so far the job losses that have been announced are still a very small percent of the total employment in that sector, he says, noting that estimates point to more than 10 million job openings in the U.S. These layoffs are minuscule in comparison to what's out there. In the Triangle, displaced workers have advantages. Abum Nasir, a professor of economics at NC Central University, says many people are moving to the Triangle, calling it an outlier and not representative of the overall U.S. economy. There are opportunities here as sectors like healthcare grow, but he says the market is still in an economic storm with low unemployment but high inflation. In a storm, we cannot predict the direction, he says. Firms like Amazon, Facebook, and Twitter tried to make predictions and went on hiring sprees. Now they're shedding those people, Nasir says. But not all displaced workers are able to find a new job quickly. Research out of 365 Data Science, which analyzed data from more than 1,100 public LinkedIn profiles, recently showed that only 26% of recently laid off workers had managed to find a new job. In the Triangle, it may be easier than in some other regions. Recent numbers out of the North Carolina Technology Association show more than 9,700 tech job openings in Raleigh for the month of January and more than 2,800 tech postings in the Durham Metro, a 3% and 20% decline, respectively, from a year ago. Across the state, there were more than 30,000 open tech positions in January. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. Copper District to reach over 300 acres, Craig Davis Properties adds more space to project in Clayton. One of the largest mixed-use projects in the Triangle has made its expansion official. Craig Davis Properties, based in Cary, made 7 separate land purchases in Clayton for a combined total of nearly $10.7 million, according to deeds filed February 24. The purchases were made for the previously announced expansion of the Copper District, a development that will sit on the former grounds of the Penny Farm along NC Highway 42 near its intersection with the U.S. Highway 70 bypass. The latest plans call for the project to be spread across nearly 300 acres. Dean Penny, a member of the Penny family and an executive at Craig Davis Properties, is spearheading the development. A spokesperson for Craig Davis Properties says these closings were part of the parcels that the town of Clayton rezoned in November. That rezoning effort paved the way for nearly 850 new homes to be built on the property. Plans for the Copper District call for a total of around 4 million square feet of space between housing, commercial, retail, office, etc. One of the goals is to bring a Main Street-type vibe to the section of the district that will have ground-floor retail. Plans also call for a school. The Copper District serves as an example of how Johnston County is evolving from a bedroom community for Wake County into an economic powerhouse of its own right. Other major developments are popping up across the county, including a waterfront district within Flowers Plantation and Eastfield Crossing in Selma, which just announced some big-name retail tenants. RV resort with floating aqua lodges proposed in area near Sanford. A new RV resort is being planned in Lee County, with its developers also proposing to build floating aqua lodges. The 57-acre resort called Swanee Swanee Lake RV Resort would be located along Swan Station Road and have frontage on Morris Pond. The site sits about 15 minutes south of downtown Sanford. On the land, property owners are proposing to develop a campground with 80 sites for RV hookups. There are also plans for 12 floating cabins along Morris Pond that will be permanently hooked up to the dock. The project was proposed during a Lee County Board of Commissioners meeting on February 20. As is customary, the board referred the request to the planning board and will decide whether to rezone the land at a later date. Subdivision sells for $75,500 per lot. Davidson Homes has purchased 89 lots in Lillington for just over $6.7 million, according to a deed filed February 22. The land sits along McDougal Road, not far from its intersection with Peach Farm Road. The purchase price comes out to $75,500 per lot. On the land, Davidson Homes plans to develop a single-family subdivision called Weller's Knoll, says Kim Mulder, Director of Land Acquisition and Entitlements at Davidson Homes. Base prices will start in the high 200,000s, and we are projecting average all-in pricing to be in the mid to high 300,000s, Mulder says. And now we turn to On Aviation and Finance, written by Lauren Onasorge. Records detail RDU expansion plans. Terminal 2 upgrades would take 5 years and $140 million. 5 years of construction and $140 million, that's what the Raleigh-Durham International Airport told the Federal Aviation Administration, will be required to complete its Terminal 2 landside expansion project. RDU's plans for Terminal 2 may have been hit with a slight hiccup when the FAA recently rejected its application for the latest tranche of terminal grants, but its application, made available through a public records request, offers new details into the airport's plans from the cost to the business case. RDU told the FAA that its landside Terminal 2 expansion could stimulate competition in the market. Current facilities are at capacity, which restricts opportunities for new entrants into the market, RDU said in its application dated March 2022. Because of the capacity limitations, it also restricts the ability of current airlines to increase market offerings, RDU stated. RDU had been targeting construction start in December 2024, according to the application. RDU told the FAA that the total project cost would come in at $140 million and had asked the FAA for $112 million, and RDU told the FAA that matching funds were likely available. RDU said the project checked most of the boxes for program considerations, telling the FAA in the application that the project would increase capacity for already constrained ticketing and check-in positions, queuing, security screening, bag claim, and baggage handling systems, international arrivals, and ground transportation passenger access. New CEO targets digital improvements at CQ or SCCU. State Employees Credit Union is modernizing by revamping its systems for the first time in 40 years and adding a business lending service to stay relevant amid the big bank competition luring loans from its members. At the center of the strategy is CEO Jim Hayes, a self-described technology buff who says digitization coupled with new products such as business loans are critical to staying relevant. We're trying not to become irrelevant for millennials and Gen Zers, Hayes says. Those are the folks that are going to be driving this platform for the next 85 years. CQ is a member-owned, not-for-profit cooperative with more than 2.7 million members, 20% of whom are current or retired state employees. Its 274-branch network extends to all 100 counties in the state. Its assets are about $50 billion, making it the second-largest credit union in the country. If Hayes is successful in modernizing CQ, the potential impact could be huge as CQ serves 1 in 4 North Carolinians. And finally, Co-Founders Capital closes on $50 million fund. Investment firm Co-Founders Capital has closed its third fund and is looking for more tech startups. Almost exactly a year after launching its third fund with an initial close of more than $23 million, the carry company says it's closed on the full $50 million. Managing partner Tim McLaughlin says the plan is to invest in 15 to 20 companies. The idea is to funnel in an initial investment of about $1 million. And then have significant follow-on reserve capital for our best-performing companies, he says. And Zach Ezone wrote our next page on healthcare and higher education. Bioventus could scrap $450 million deal. Durham company may drop attempt to acquire CardiHeal. Durham's Bioventus may reverse course on a major acquisition. Bioventus has reached a settlement agreement with the former shareholders of CardiHeal, a medical device firm Bioventus agreed to acquire last year. As part of the new deal, Bioventus could transfer ownership of CardiHeal back to the latter's former shareholders to eliminate $350 million of deferred purchase price obligations. Bioventus has 30 days to evaluate its options to pay the remaining amount it owes, $215 million. If it doesn't obtain sufficient funding, it will transfer ownership back to its former shareholders. Bioventus said it will only pursue funding options on an opportunistic basis and on terms favorable to its stakeholders. Bioventus has the option to exercise up to two extension periods of 15 days each for $5 million per extension. This deal, which the parties entered March 6, requires Bioventus to pay $10 million in cash, as well as a $150,000 non-refundable expense reimbursement payment in exchange for the company's release from its obligations. This comes less than a year after Bioventus announced a deal to acquire CardiHeal for up to $450 million. When the company announced the deal last April, CEO Ken Reale said CardiHeal addresses an unmet need in joint preservation and cartilage regeneration for nearly 700,000 patients in the U.S., but Bioventus has faced challenges financing the deal. Initially, it planned to raise $415 million through a private offering. Bioventus scrapped that plan last year amid growing headwinds in the life sciences industry that have since persisted. Instead, Bioventus reworked its acquisition of CardiHeal into a deal requiring less money up front and shifting a significant amount of the financing to future payments. Bioventus paid $100 million upon closing the deal, which included $50 million from a deposit and $50 million from a financing arrangement. The deal required Bioventus to pay the remaining $215 million in five tranches from 2023 through no later than 2027. Bioventus was also potentially eligible to pay an additional $135 million based on the achievement of certain sales milestones. During a healthcare conference in January, Reale outlined the company's plans to divest some of its non-core assets to enhance liquidity ahead of the CardiHeal payments. As of October 1, Bioventus had $34.4 million in cash and cash equivalents and $424.4 million in debt obligations, according to the company's third quarter results. G1 Therapeutics cuts 30% of workforce. Less than a month after scrapping a late-stage clinical program, G1 Therapeutics is cutting nearly a third of its workforce. The commercial stage oncology company in Research Triangle Park has reduced headcount by about 30% in an effort to lower operating expenses. G1, which at the end of last year had 170 full-time employees, expects to reduce its operating expenses by between 20 to 30% in 2023 through the layoffs and other decisions. Last year, operating expenses for G1 totaled about $187.5 million. CEO Jack Bailey said the company was making prudent reductions to extend its cash runway. It ended 2022 with $145.1 million in cash and cash equivalents, which includes $52 million in net proceeds from a public offering that closed in the fourth quarter. Also, Chief Financial Officer Jennifer Moses will resign March 15 and serve as an advisor for 1 year. And finally, startup hits key milestone with FDA news. A year after closing a $30 million raise, a Research Triangle Park biotech has hit another milestone. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has cleared Encyclix Bio to move its lead compound into a Phase 1-2 study. The company, formerly known as ARC Therapeutics, was founded by former employees of G1 Therapeutics. Encyclix launched in 2020 with a $6 million investment led by Eshelman Ventures, started by PPD founder Fred Eshelman. And now we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. Bite Amanda Chef will launch Spot and Carry, location concept coming to new downtown project. The top chef at two of downtown Raleigh's most popular restaurants is venturing out on his own. After spending the past decade running the kitchens at Bite Amanda and Brewery Bavana, Chef Lou Buonsanga is planning to open a new restaurant in downtown Cary later this year. The new spot will be called SAP, spelled S-A-A-P, and offer cuisine from the Southeast Asian nation of Laos. SAP is opening in one of the new developments reshaping Cary's downtown. The building, set to deliver this summer, will be home to a luxury apartment community called The Walker. The restaurant will have 2,600 square feet of space on the first floor at 370 South Walker Street. We have been holding on to two restaurant spaces at the Walker for the right chefs and great concepts, says Bill Zahn, one of the project's developers. It's the right time for me. As a seasoned chef, all the ingredients and resources are available to make this dream a reality, Buonsanga says. I think that Laotian food, which is influenced by Indian, Thai, Vietnamese, and Chinese cuisines, is a perfect fit for a community that is as diverse as Cary. So when Zahn approached me about opening a restaurant next to what is going to be a world-class park, it made sense immediately. Buonsanga, a native of Laos, will bring the Laotian dishes that he has built the following four, including curries, satays, green papaya salad, and crispy pork belly soup. The menu will allow guests to sample and share dishes. SAP, which means delicious in Laotian, will feature 70 seats with indoor and patio seating. The restaurant's bar will serve wine, beer, mocktails, and cocktails. Buonsanga was hired to open Bite Amanda in 2012. The restaurant was one of the relatively few Laotian restaurants in the United States at the time. He later became executive chef at Bite Amanda's sister restaurant, Brewery Bavana. Buonsanga will be leaving both restaurants in May to focus on opening SAP. Buonsanga is partnering with Walker Walnut Hospitality, a group of investors that includes Zahn. Advanced CEO retiring, but challenges remain. Tom Greco took over as CEO of Advance Auto Parts in 2016 with the goal of executing a turnaround for the retailer before retiring. Now, Greco has announced his retirement, but the company still has a ways to go. Though improvements have been made, Advance is still working toward some of its internal goals. Its five-year plan showed Advance generating a 15% operating margin in 2021, but by the end of 2022, Advance was just at under 10%. It was an ongoing turnaround that hasn't really shown concrete signs of having turned around, says Brett Jordan, managing director and research analyst at Jefferies. How much of the decision to retire was made by Tom versus the board? I don't know, but he's been at it for 7 years now and without a lot of concrete signs of improvement. It's probably time for a fresh set of eyeballs. And finally, Drake, Usher to headline Dreamville. This year's Dreamville Festival, put on by North Carolina native and rapper J. Cole, will feature Usher and Drake. The two-day festival will be April 1st and 2nd at Dick's Park. Dreamville Fest is in its third year and drew 80,000 people last year. The festival is one of the largest artist-run festivals in the country. Other performers include Sean Paul, Waka Flocka Flame, Summer Walker, City Girls, Glorilla, Lil Durk, Mario, Ruben Vincent, and Burna Boy. The team of artists signed to Cole's Dreamville Records label will also be performing, including Ari Lennox, J.I.D., Baz, Earthgang, Kaz, Omen, and Loot. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Luxury apartments planned for Durham. D.C. developer looks to put 178 units in spot on Rigsby Avenue. Downtown Durham is going to get even more lively and expensive with another high-end mixed-use apartment project planned. Developer Four Points of Washington, D.C. has submitted preliminary site plans for 178 residential units and 11,215 square feet of retail space at 715 and 719 Rigsby Avenue. The site is next to the company's Gearhouse development on Foster Street, which includes residential units, retail space, and an expansion of the Motor Co. Music Hall. Site plans show the Rigsby project will be a seven-story building with retail on the ground floor and six floors of apartments. The apartments will be a mix of studio, one and two bedrooms. A parking garage with 162 spaces will be part of the building, with one level below grade and two additional levels. Four Points Vice President of Development John Sunter says the apartments will be similar to the ones being developed in Gear House, but with fixed islands and bay windows that will give residents clear views straight down Rigsby Avenue. While the company doesn't have an estimated rental range right now, the apartments will be top of the market, they say. The site plans show four spaces for retailers. Sunter says the company is looking to have co-working, a restaurant, and a speakeasy among the uses for the space. We're trying to create a place that will come and knit the whole energy of the neighborhood together with this cross-block connection, Sunter says. By owning the space next door and the alleys connecting them, the company has an opportunity to create a social and activated space where the two projects are connected by a 0.32-acre linear park. The speakeasy will be where the linear park connects to the alley. An estimated cost for the project was not provided. The company hopes to start construction in June 2024 with an estimated completion date of June 2026. Four Points owns both parcels, which total 0.792 acres, and have a combined assessed value of about $1.9 million. The company acquired both properties for approximately $5.83 million in June 2022. The properties have out-of-service auto repair garages on site currently. New industrial space in Garner filling up. A new business park in Garner has brought on new tenants totaling 363,200 square feet of space. Beacon Partners and HM Partners, joint developers on Beacon Commerce Park, have signed leases with four companies in recent weeks. GreenTech Renewables, a supplier of solar energy equipment, and Alcami Corporation, a contract development and manufacturing organization, along with two undisclosed tenants in the distribution sector, will be moved in this year. GreenTech Renewables, a unit of Consolidated Electrical Distributors, is leasing 68,700 square feet in Building 3. One of the undisclosed companies is also leasing 164,956 square feet in Building 3. Alcami Corporation leased 65,002 square feet in Building 1, while a third-party logistics firm signed on for 64,549 square feet also in Building 1. Move-in for the two companies will be this spring. And finally, Toll Brothers backs out of major project. A national home builder known for its luxury homes appears to be no longer involved with a major residential development in Rollsville. Toll Brothers had filed a rezoning request in December 2021 for plans to develop Tom's Creek. The residential development would have about 551 homes on 224.6 acres west of downtown Rollsville. Rollsville Planning Director Meredith Gruber says Toll Brothers is no longer involved with the project, but the rezoning case is still active as the property owner is working with a local brokerage agency, Alliance Group, to move forward. Gruber says the town is anticipating receiving an updated submittal later this month. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. Fundraiser for children sets record. A night to dream big turned into just that for a Raleigh effort that has been helping children, especially orphans, since 1899. The Methodist Home for Children raised a record $450,000 in its Evening to Dream Big event January 28 at the Raleigh Convention Center. The gala drew 515 supporters, and the Reverend Bruce Stanley, president and CEO of the Methodist Home, says the organization deeply appreciated the investment in children's welfare. It was an outpouring of joy and generosity to ensure that every child has a chance, he says. Stanley says the money raised was $75,000 more than any previous event. Bertice Berry, an educator who grew up poor in Delaware, was the keynote speaker at the event. The home dates to 1899 and the founding of the Methodist Orphanage, which was near the current facilities and is now known as Fletcher Park. The Methodist Home continues to support children across the state in need in a variety of ways, including partnering with public agencies. New Triangle Family Services leader named Lisa Lowe Hall, a 20-year veteran of the healthcare and nonprofit industries, became the new CEO of Triangle Family Services February 6. Lowe Hall will lead the 85-year-old nonprofit, which helps families facing an array of crises. She will succeed Alice Lutz, who served in the role for 13 years and retired on January 1st. Lisa is the type of leader we were looking for to take Triangle Family Services into the future, says Board Chair Russ Jones. She has demonstrated expertise in all areas of healthcare, which is a primary service we offer our clients. Lo Hall has served in various leadership roles with some of the state's largest healthcare systems, including Moses Cone, Wake Med, Duke Hospitals, and Planned Parenthood. It is an honor and a privilege to be chosen to lead TFS, an organization with an engaged board of directors and talented leadership team that deeply cares about its employees and families served, Lo Hall says. Beacon Point underway. Beacon Point, a project in Southeast Raleigh that adds a commercial component to a project with a YMCA and an elementary school, is underway. The goal is to bring businesses and growth to an underserved area of Raleigh. The nonprofit Self-Help Ventures Fund was selected by the YMCA of the Triangle to develop Beacon Point with a mix of commercial uses that complement the neighborhood's broader plan. The groundbreaking was December 8th. UNC students raise money for Children's Hospital. Students at UNC Chapel Hill will hold a marathon dance to raise money for the UNC Children's Hospital on March 25 as the Tar Heel tradition continues. The Carolina for the Kids event dates to 1997 and has raised more than $7 million for the patients and families. The dance marathon is a 12-hour event with no sitting and no sleeping that includes live music, games, and performances. The dance begins at noon, March 25 at Fetzer Hall. Donations are welcome also. Ammons Foundation announces grants. 12 organizations across North Carolina are the recipients this year of grants from the Jandy Ammons Foundation, totaling $406,259. Over 10 years, the foundation has given away almost $2.75 million. We're thrilled about the diversity of projects this year, says Jan Ammons, TJAF, co-founder and president. The 12 grant recipients hit every aspect of our mission, ranging from educational settings to environmental improvements and community gathering to mission-inspired work. She and her husband, Andy, created the foundations. This year's grants will fund in Raleigh Art Space, Learning Together, NC State Engineering Foundation, NC Wildlife Federation, Poe Center for Health Education, and Note in the Pocket. In Durham, Book Harvest. In Beaufort County, Ducks Unlimited. In Seagrove, Historic Lux Cannery. And in Wake Forest, Historic Preservation Commission and College Birthplace Society. Our goal is to help nonprofits with specific projects get out of the planning phase and into implementation, Andy Ammons says. And finally, Honor Bridge has big year in 2022. A group dedicated to saving lives through organ donations had a big year in 2022. Honor Bridge says organs were recovered from a record 316 donors last year. Honor Bridge also recovered tissues from 1,193 donors and transplanted 840 organs. The group says those efforts helped save 740 lives, its second highest total ever. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Medicaid Expansion, What's the Full Story? I have written before about the need for North Carolina to join the list of states accepting the federal government's assistance to expand Medicaid. For one reason or another, the deal never got done. Then a few days ago, the General Assembly leaders announced a deal to expand Medicaid. Governor Roy Cooper stamped his approval, and we all thought that this was a done deal. But upon further review, is it really? The biggest hurdle to this Medicaid expansion bill may be the fact that it is tied to the passage of the state budget. The North Carolina budget is a two-year spending plan, and ever since Cooper became governor, he's wanted the expansion clause to be in the budget, and now here it is. But in doing so, Cooper has given up the leverage to the Republican leadership in the House and Senate that collectively is one vote shy of overriding Cooper's veto. It is likely Cooper's opponents will introduce several measures in the state budget that are unlikely to sit well with the governor, who may threaten a veto. But if he does so, the Medicaid expansion provision dies. A member of my text service, promo.bizjournals.com/TBJtext, said this, I predict a budget will not be passed this year. When this occurs, North Carolina simply continues with the previous previous biennial budget. Therefore, Medicaid expansion is not enacted because no budget was passed. The Senate, House, and governor's budgets will be far apart on other items that will be revealed in the drafts. Moreover, once the feds get enough states participating, they will adjust the Fed and state cost share, requiring more state dollars. Individual states must pay the increased costs or reduce covered services. Never a good position to be in. The result is the feds controlling more of the healthcare system. Medicaid expansion does not require additional state funding. The federal government pays 90% of the cost, while hospital assessments and the prepaid health plan, or PHP, premium taxes that health insurance companies in North Carolina pay would cover the remaining 10%. Critics of the expansion have argued that by expanding Medicaid, the quality of care for all North Carolinians will drop dramatically. The theory, there will be a dramatic increase in the number of people on the program with the same amount of health care providers. There will be a long wait for appointments, and providers will rush with patients to accommodate the extra revenue stream. Had the Medicaid expansion provision been stripped from the budget, the state would be days away from passing the bill. Now, as the TBJ member notes above, the entire budget comes into question because parties could be arguing about issues surrounding abortion laws, voting rules, immigration enforcement, University of North Carolina system trustees, course makeups, and other wedge issues. I'm not sure what Cooper will do then. For the sake of the much-needed Medicaid expansion that is expected to benefit at least 600,000 North Carolinians, will Cooper avoid an all-out political joust with the Republicans and sign the budget? That's doubtful, because his Democratic colleagues, who are expected to run for state and federal jobs next year, would be furious. Cooper's term ends next year. It will be a shame for North Carolina to miss the opportunity to help the underprivileged community in a meaningful way. But politics, leverage, and spite carry a far more powerful and intoxicating dose. A story is unfolding underneath all of this, and we need to know and inform. And our Business Pulse survey on this same viewpoint page relates to last week's editor's notebook that discussed the high number of executives that are friendly with the editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal who are being diagnosed with serious diseases. The Business Pulse question, have you or someone you know been diagnosed with a severe disease in recent months? The total number of responses, 120. The I know someone, 43%. No, 33%. And yes, I have, 24%. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. 832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.